Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And yeah, we're still fighting the crud here, the weather and the crud. But the winds have died down from 60 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour. But whenever I try to shovel the snow, I'm still snowed in because the wind blows it right back over. So here we go. This is going to be interesting. But anyway, long story short, we've got a terrific guest on, Jeff Nyquist, noted historian, really well known for his knowledge of military strategy, the intricacies of all sides of military conflicts. And we also share a platform on John Moore's show on RBN Tuesday mornings. You want to catch that? And that is, 7 to 9 Mountain Time. So John's time central, that would be 8 to 10. And I got to tell you, it's a good show. We have Steve Bannon on there, and we cover a lot of interesting topics, so I'd encourage you to follow along. Before we get started with Jeffrey, I want to let you know that I'm very, very concerned about your food supply. I agree with Dane Wigington. Soon it could be really true that the only food you have access to is what's in your home. And I'm telling you, folks, you need to step out of the way about what's coming. These people that are in control of our government are becoming dangerously autocratic. They're centralizing power. They have figured out how to steal every election. And so we absolutely need to have all hands on deck and make sure that you're prepared. Food and water is where it's at. So we have good storable food, a great discount. My Patriot Supply, largest supplier in the United States. Yeah, they have not raised prices, and they have a great special. $250 off to 3-month supply of the emergency kit. I recommend that everyone in your family has one of these. And you go, what if we want more? Okay, order in 3-month increments so you get the sale all the way through. And also, too, you're going to get 25-year shelf life, 2,000 calories per day. It's really a good deal. Go to foodwithdave.com. That's foodwithdave.com. And along those lines, you're going to have water. We've seen 8 attacks on the grid. Major attacks. There's all kinds of minor ones, but 8 major attacks. It's orchestrated. It's violent. And it could go permanent. Could be a beta test. And if the power's down for very long, you're going to have to scavenge water. So you better have good water filtration. The Alexa Pure Pro Water Filter is as good as it gets. They published their research at waterwithdave.com. They, too, have not raised rates. They, too, have a special, so you can check that out, waterwithdave.com. And then finally, I believe if you're going to suffer, let's suffer in comfort. And as you all know, I'm a big fan of Lindell and MyPillow, and he has risked so much and sacrificed so much for his country in the interest of election integrity. And they approached us and said, would you like to sell our products? We'll give your audience a great discount. I said, well, what will you give us? He goes, 2-for-1 on everything. And then some of the stuff like the Giza sheets, they're $90. They're now on sale for $28. What a great Christmas gift this will be. All you have to do is go to mypillow.com/Hodges, coupon code Hodges, to get these great savings. That's mypillow.com/Hodges, coupon code Hodges. And let's help Mike, but also, too, hey, let's live in some comfort while we're suffering through this autocratic regime that we're living under. Well, Jeffrey and I have agreed to talk about a few key points here today, and I'm going to introduce him, but I've also told him I want you to have the freedom to go anywhere you want, because we live in such volatile, fluid times that we have to be flexible in our interviews. So, Jeffrey, welcome to the show. I'm really glad you could join us.
No, thanks for having me, Dave.
It really is a pleasure to be on with you, with J.R. Moore. I've known John for years and years and years. I love John Moore, and he does such a good job, and so I feel we get to cover a lot of ground, a lot of valuable ground on that show.
Oh, yeah, I think we do. It's great to have you on there. That helps it, it helps move it along, and you're very focused. So you have 3 things that are kind of in the news. Possible expansion of the Ukraine war, Putin's status as a leader, is it secure, and China flying nuke bombers over Taiwan, and nobody's really saying anything. And then, of course, the Brazil election fracas. And so I think an opening comment might be 2 opening comments.
Okay.
One of the problems that we have as Americans, and you might want to have your listeners think about this. We are attracted to things because they're immediate, and then once there's some kind of dramatic happening, then we forget. Then we're on to the next thing. So we're almost like chickens with our heads cut off, running around, chasing these newsy things. We never stop to connect everything up. And so they become a series of unanalyzed topics, unanalyzed things that just fly by. And what a lot of people do is they have an ideological pigeonholing system where they put them all. And I think we have to do better if we want to get out of the mess we're in. I think the public has to not be led by the news, but has to understand it and then understand what they have to do and sort of demand from their leaders. Or if they are leaders, and some people who listen to your show probably are community leaders. So I'm big on analysis. And so it's like in the news, a lot of things that go by, we don't know what they mean right away. It takes time and it takes a larger knowledge to know. So let's go to the first one, a possible expansion of the Ukraine war. Trying to figure out how much people know about the Ukraine war. What I see is like people, I see Jesse Waters on Fox News every few minutes taking a jab at Zelensky. And I see that there's a lot of Americans are very alienated from the U.S. government, the Biden administration, and our system that's being taken over by Marxists. So they see Biden supporting Ukraine, and they think, well, Ukraine must be bad because Biden's supporting it. Maybe Putin's okay, don't know, but Biden's certainly bad. So let me try to analyze the Ukraine war. If you go into the background of the Ukraine war, you'll find that there was this thing called the Soviet Union, and it broke apart. And Mr. Putin is trying to put it back together again. Whatever people want to say, he's a Christian, he's a conservative, that's all lies. Because, for example, Mr. Putin hosted on the 100th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution, he hosted in Sochi, Russia, the International Festival of Youth and Students. It's an international communist youth organization. It's the biggest one in the world. And he had 30,000 of them in a stadium there in Sochi cheering him on as he, I'm not sure if he gave the keynote address, I think it was the opening address, and he said, "You are the future, we believe in you," to communist youth. Now, this is not the speech of a Christian. This is the speech of the man who is building military facilities for Nicaragua, the communist dictator Daniel Ortega, who's supporting Cuba, who has sent troops to Venezuela. There are Russian anti-aircraft troops in Caracas. Venezuela's a communist country. So, and is receiving artillery shells from communist North Korea, from Little Rocket Man, and is receiving also military supplies from Red China, communist China, we used to call it that. So all of the help he's receiving and all the help he's giving is communist countries. And the only communist country he's seriously engaged with helping is Iran, which their leaders, although they're Islamic, they all went to Moscow State University. And maybe they were recruited by the KGB there, huh? I'm just maybe guessing.
I think that's a safe guess.
The Iranian form of Islam, by the way, is a kind of liberation theology form of Islam, which a lot of people don't know. And so it is a radical revolutionary form of Islam, which has a lot of socialistic elements in it, shall we say. So now looking who Putin is, he's invaded Ukraine because he says Ukraine isn't a real country, it doesn't exist. And you had Sergei Shoigu, the Russian defense minister, say some weeks ago, got caught on videotape saying, "First we will restore the Soviet Union, then we will have peace." Okay. Mm-hmm. So what this is really about, it's a war of independence of Ukraine that does not want to be rolled up back up into the Soviet Union under Moscow.
Yes.
Now, Mr. Biden, and this ties to your question about Brazil and the election, they had such blatant election fraud in Brazil that it's not even like a question. So the people are out there, millions of them, in the street going, no, we don't accept this. We don't want... Lula was a criminal, convicted criminal. And some communist-controlled judge got him out of jail so he could run for president. And, of course, they cheated. He's going to be president sworn in on January 1st of next year. And the people are out there on the streets. They don't want the election to go forward. All of the avenues that Bolsonaro is pursuing to overturn the election are closing to him. And what does the Biden administration do? They send Blinken, they send their representatives to Brazil, and they say, if the army intervenes on the side of the people against this criminal Lula, they don't, you know, against this good, legally elected Lula, if your army goes against Lula, there's going to be hell to pay. The United States, the sanctions put on Brazil by the U.S., it will make what we've done to Russia, which is virtually, you talk to people, it's not much that we've done to Russia. It'll make that look like nothing. They're going to really sanction Brazil. So they've threatened the Brazilian military. So, wait a minute, Lula's a friend of Putin. Lula's a friend of Xi Jinping. Lula founded the Sao Paulo Forum with Fidel Castro. Sao Paulo Forum is behind the Workers' Party that elected him, that elected the communists that got elected last year in Chile, that Mr. Castillo, the communist that got elected in Peru, who just recently got deposed, and all in all these countries, Cuba, by the way, and Venezuela and Nicaragua are demanding that Castillo be reinstated as president, of course, and of course the communist president in Colombia, former terrorist, former communist, right? They're always former. The fact is that the Biden administration's support for Ukraine is equivocal. They are supporting Ukraine with slow-walking things. They're not giving the amount that's being claimed. Ukraine is a major weapons-producing country on its own, has its own arms industry. It just needs a few helps from other countries, because in a war you're having really – they're being attacked by a 1,000-pound gorilla. Russia's three times the size of Ukraine in population. And they're fending them off. So will the war expand? I think it will expand for reasons that nobody thinks it will, or it might expand. If the Russians win the war, it will very likely expand, because we've had Lukashenko, the president of Belarus, has said this. When the war was fresh, that they were going to move on other countries, on the Baltic states and Poland, we have had snippets of kind of their intentions. They hate Poland even as much or more than they hate Ukraine in Moscow, and they want the Baltic states back. Those are NATO protected countries. Those are in NATO. Poland and the Baltic states. And of course you had all these very violent threats that suddenly stopped, that were being made by the Russian government about Finland and Sweden joining NATO. And just to give you, Sweden doesn't values like Switzerland its neutrality. Sweden hasn't been involved in a war since Napoleon. That was the last war they got involved with. They fought against Napoleon in the latter part of the Napoleonic Wars. And Finland, you've heard the term Finlandization, a country that's going to remain neutral no matter what, is going to be even maybe a little helpful to Russia. They are so frightened by Russia, these two Scandinavian or Nordic countries, I should say, rather, because Finland is Nordic rather than Scandinavian. These two countries are really scared, and they want to be in NATO. And Russia... When Russia threatened Sweden, the Swedish defense minister said, excuse me, Mr. Putin, we are a sovereign country. We can join whatever alliance we want. Good for them. They are rearming, Sweden is. Whereas the Germans are kind of bumbling around, claiming they're going to and not really effectively doing it. So will the war expand? I think that there is a kind of logic to what Russia has begun to do here, and that Russia cannot allow NATO to exist because they have threatened and they have destroyed so much that if they actually collapse Ukraine and get what they want, the animosity is not going to go away. And the problem that Russia is going to have is that they're going to have to break down NATO somehow. How? How do they do it? And you see, Russia can't use nuclear weapons on Ukraine because they are Slavic brothers. I mean, when Putin claims there is no Ukraine, he's saying they're basically Russians. The Ukrainians are just Russians. Ukraine really means, in the Russian language, the outer part of Russia. And he's making that claim to claim that it's not really a country. So that I think that there's a very good chance that another war will follow this one because of the reaction of if Ukraine is to lose. If you want peace, you want Ukraine to hold the line on Russia as long as you can. Because if that Russian army, with its tactical nuclear weapons and the kind of weapons they won't use in large numbers against the Ukrainians, is on the border of NATO, there's nothing holding them back from using those weapons on the NATO countries. And NATO is filled with traitors, people who really sympathize with communism. But many of them, they realize maybe that Russia is going to do things that even they won't like. And that's one of the problems they're having, the Russians are having in Europe, is that their friends in Europe are a little shaky now, a little shaken. Because it's one thing to be far on the left and to even have communist sympathies. It's another thing to see people being murdered and their countries being invaded and think, oh gosh, what have I done? You know.
I agree.
So
I couldn't agree with you more, Jeff. But what I'm also wondering is, isn't climate change coming along at the wrong time for NATO defense?
Oh, climate change is a communist sabotage operation. I mean, this climate change thing was invented by Russian think tanks, and it was the editor of Pravda who first proposed it in a book, which is available in English and German as well as Russian. In which he said, hey, look, greenhouse gases, I think this book was first, it was published in 82, greenhouse gases are what's heating up the planet. We just got to get everybody to the whole, we got to make it into a celebrated cause all over the world, and this will advance socialism. And of course, he was speaking as a Soviet, this fellow ended up being on the Politburo, Gorbachev's Politburo. He was rewarded for his ideas. He was a science guy, as well as an editor of Pravda. So people don't realize that when you talk about global warming, you're not really talking about science. Just like so many things that are claimed to be science now, it's really ideology disguised as science, trying to get you to go along.
I don't look at it as science either. I ask the question because I look at it as a power grab. And it's a power grab that's based on denying energy to energy-producing countries, destroying their economy, therefore limiting their ability to wage war.
Well, you'll notice that it isn't being used in Russia. Notice that there is no global warming movement in Russia. There is no attempt to lower oil production in Russia for the sake of the planet.
Mm-hmm. Or China.
Well, China doesn't have much oil production. So you see that this is mainly designed to cripple Western countries, to make them dependent. And it's aimed, just like the vaccines were mainly the mRNA vaccines were largely only used in NATO countries. You know, there are a few third world countries where they use the vaccines, but never nowhere in the to the degree used in Europe and in North America. So that's really interesting, isn't it? So, and now we find out that the Pfizer vaccine was originally made in China. The first factory was made in mm-hmm. China for the Pfizer vaccine. And that there were 9 testing groups and one was led by a PLA general. So what was that all about? See, we don't get any answers, and we're told, well, we have to take a medical treatment injected into the arm, and they won't even publish the ingredients they're injecting us with, and it's a new technology, and it hasn't been properly safety tested, and if anything goes wrong, you can't sue the company? Come on. Come on. So that leads to your question about China flying nuke bombers over Taiwan. Look, China unleashed a pandemic on the world, I believe. I could be wrong. It could have been an accidental.
I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong at all.
If it was accidental, they went with it as a full-blown, well, we'll just use it as a, but because, you know, I was talking to a friend who knows somebody really hooked up in China, a Westerner working over there, and he said when that pandemic, when they locked down Wuhan, they had the barricades already, they had, this was planned. This was not spur of the moment. They had it all organized in advance. And so, and then the fact that that breakout in Wuhan happened right at Chinese New Year. Chinese New Year at Wuhan is like Chinese from all over the world, from, you know, Northern Italy and Australia and California and France, everywhere. Chinese go to Wuhan and they're in the potluck and they're at the dance and they're at the events. And then they all fly back to Europe and North America, Australia, etc. Well, that's, isn't it funny? It incubated in there from late 2019 right through January and Chinese New Year's in the middle of January. And they let the city fathers knew they had a pandemic and said, we need to cancel the potluck and we need to cancel the dance. Orders came down from Beijing. And anybody can look this up and said, you are not canceling that potluck. They wanted it spread all around the city. They wanted it to go back out to the world. Why? Why did they want that? So these are the questions. So when you talk about China, the same reason people aren't talking about whether or not China launched a biological attack on the world, they're not really going to talk about Chinese bombers armed with nukes violating Taiwanese airspace, or Japanese airspace for that matter, or North Korea or South Korean airspace. The communist powers of Russia and China, and I include Russia, and I will debate anyone on this topic. You're a simpleton if you believe that Gorbachev came out there and lowered that hammer and sickle flag and the Communist Party just all put their cards away and walked away peacefully, knowing what communism teaches and what it's about. They just gave up without a fight. I mean, that's ridiculous. And yet the whole world believed this dog and pony show. And now look at where we are. They're aligned with China, North Korea, Cuba, Venezuela. What has changed? It's just the outward advertising. Oh, I'm a Christian, Mr. Putin says. But if you listen to Mr. Putin, watch his press conferences. He'll say things like, well, you know, Leninism is essentially the same thing that Jesus Christ taught. He said that, basically. So it's like, oh, read the fine print. When you're taking up this idea, you know, Tucker Carlson, read the fine print. The problem with Americans is all of these topics are, like I said before, unanalyzed. You have to have enough information to actually analyze them to understand. So then going back to whether Putin's status as leader, is it secure? Yes, it's secure. More secure in some ways than the Chinese leaders, because we are seeing the protests in China, although they've died down a bit. As of Monday, they were about half as big as they were at their peak a week ago Wednesday. Actually, 2 weeks ago Wednesday now, 2 weeks ago yesterday. It's a serious thing in China, but they, by making concessions, careful concessions, and using the police and intimidating certain people, they're getting it under control in China. But in Russia, what's amazing is given the sacrifices that Putin has put on the Russian people, that the protests have been so muted in Russia, and that the Russian people are going along with it. It is really remarkable. But I think, despite the Russians having not as good a reputation as organizers, I think what they excel at is politics. And they have prepared politically in advance, even though they weren't, you know, militarily up to snuff. And they are honing that machine. So the fear is, I know an offensive is coming to Ukraine. And, you know, with all the failures that's happened, you know, people have questioned Mr. Putin, indirectly. They won't on Russian TV question him. They'll want to blame the generals, right? Blame the defense minister, things like this, but they won't put it on him. He's sort of like not touchable. And he is really the core of the system. He's 70 years old. His health is not perfect. He has a form of cancer, which is treatable. He has Parkinson's. And this has been confirmed to me by different sources. But nothing, as I'm told by a friend of his, nothing that's going to kill him. Nothing that immediately is. Although, you know, how much longer does a person at 70 have as an active leader? That's a question. But at least enough to continue this war for now. So that answers the question. The other significant question is whether there'll be civil war in Brazil. And that depends on which way the army goes. If parts of the army side with the people, and maybe part of the army doesn't, there will be civil war in Brazil. And that is up to Mr. Bolsonaro. That's a terrible burden for him. And I don't think he wants to subject his country to a civil war. And I'm sure, knowing him, I'm sure he is tormented by the thought that he could end up putting his country through something like that, and wondering if there is any other way to avoid the communists taking over the country. And I don't think there is. If they don't have a civil war, or they don't, if he doesn't risk a civil war by standing up to this election outcome, once they get in, this next time Lula gets in, they will never give up. It'll be like Venezuela. They'll link up with their FARC friends in Colombia and Venezuela and Cuba, and they will form the new communist bloc in Latin America.
Well, there seems to be a lot of that.
There'll be real strategic consequences for the U.S. on that one.
There seems to be a lot of that going on with regard to Peru and Argentina, too. And we're seeing the emergence of some populism in Peru and Argentina, but also a fair amount of Chinese involvement. Here's what I'm wondering. Could the conflict in South America go regional? And will China interject their military into this conflict? And if they would, how would the U.S. respond to that?
Well, China's got a port project in Peru, which is extremely important to them. I think it's going to be the largest port in South America, and it's going to have an enormous capacity, and it would be a ready invasion route for the Chinese if they wanted to invade South America. Of course, China's already, in a sense, invaded South America, and that Chinese businesses and Chinese personnel are all over Latin America. You go to some of these countries, and you'll find the Chinese have a kind of presence in so many places. Latin America has always been a little anarchic in that there's a lot of freedom to move around and to do things, and they have really exploited it, and they have taken over a lot of businesses in some of these countries, and they've staked out strategic ground, and they've got governments now, like in Chile, like in Peru. Castillo got overthrown over the past week. There was an impeachment against him, as you may have read in the news. He's a real red. He's a real old-fashioned communist. And Castillo didn't want to be impeached, so he was going to dissolve the legislature, right? Well, the legislature wouldn't be dissolved, so they just got rid of him. And they put his vice president. And his vice president was also a member of the Free Peru Party, I think, which is the Marxist party there. But she got kicked out, and she lost two of her – they call her the first vice president, and I guess there's a second vice president. But she lost two ministerial positions and was kicked out of the party, so now she's president. Now, we don't know how to read that. She's been big on Klaus Schwab's agenda. And if you want to know who Klaus Schwab is, just look at the bust of Lenin in his bookshelf behind him in his interviews. And also, last summer, that World Festival of Youth and Students met at Beijing. And the keynote speaker for all those communist youth was Klaus Schwab. So Klaus Schwab is speaking before the communist youth and saying, "You go get them, you young people, you, I'm behind you." So this is who these people are, the communists. And so when we analyze any of these events, we have to connect it up to this world global communist movement that wants to destroy the United States and consolidate global dominance. And so whenever you see people in the West that are going along with the agenda, think fifth column. And fifth column is an old term from the Roman Civil War. The fifth column is the enemy's agents and activists inside the country that's about to be invaded. So I think we have a fifth column in the United States and in Europe, and it's so big and it's so influential. It's ruling governments. I think we've had prime ministers and presidents that are really in members of the enemy camp, and they just posture as if they're, you know, oh no, I'm an enemy of Russia too. Oh no, I don't like China too. Oh no, I'm, you know, blah blah blah. Then Mr. Biden closes the Keystone Pipeline, which helped Russia immediately, right? So whatever can help, you just look at their history. It's not, don't listen to what they say, look at what they do.
Well, Jeff, we see this in the Republican leadership, and this is going a little far afield, but it proves your point. You've got FTX money with McCarthy and Rhoda McDaniel, and you've also the head of the RNC, and then you've got it with Mitch McConnell. And then you've got RNC published expenditures that came out today on Red State, and they lavishly spent $20 million while they pulled funding from Adam Laxall, Herschel Walker, and Blake Masters, three races they could have won, and they pulled $20 million. $7 million was to pay for donors. A bunch of it was for like furniture, going to Super Bowls, going to this, going to that. Just lavish spending adding up to $20 million. And then they've got at the local levels, like where I live in Maricopa County, the head of the Maricopa County Board of Government and also the county clerk and recorder that ran the worst election in the history of the U.S., they contribute to a PAC designed to get rid of America First candidates. And Mitch McConnell reached an agreement with Chuck Schumer to do the same thing in the Senate. So to me, and I just gave you a microcosm, I could go on for an hour about this.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
a microcosm that our Republican leadership has betrayed the Republican rank and file, and they're on the same side as the Democrats. And this is why I pulled my Republican membership unless Harmeet Dhillon is installed as the RNC director.
Well, the Chinese have figured out something. The Chinese have been able to do something the Russians weren't able to do. The Chinese played this trade game, and they wanted to become a major manufacturer. And they had the population for the cheap labor to appeal to the people who wanted to make money here. And they were able to pretend that they were our buddies, even though anyone with a lick of common sense would know that they're not. And so they got big companies to invest a lot of money in China and to make a lot of money in China, at least for the years that they're making it. But it's and of course, politics runs on money. Politics runs on donations. And so, you know, how do people enter the Senate and leave, or have other jobs in government and leave with a lot more money than their salary could have allowed them to save, right?
Yeah, it's obvious.
How do they become millionaires? How does Biden, who's been in a United States senator and a congressman all these years, become so rich? And or Al Gore or these other people? The thing is that since it runs on money, and politicians in a way can be bought, and they can be, you can pay money to get them elected, this game becomes very simple for the Chinese. It's a matter of saying, oh, we are friend, we will support you if you support us, and if you're not our friend, you're going to get hurt, you know, this sort of Chinese approach. And it's been very successful in different, I mean, it's successful in France, where the Chinese have a great deal of influence, and Macron's even referred to himself as a Maoist at times, right? And of course, in Europe, communist ideas are much more fashionable. I mean, you go back, oh gosh, you go back almost a half a century, and you've got someone like Erich Wergeland, the German philosopher who was born in Cologne, Germany, and educated in Vienna, who, when he went back in the 60s, to Germany found that in West Berlin, right, that you couldn't say anything. You couldn't speak in a university unless you were a Marxist. The Marxist student body would shut you up. And the same thing at other German schools back then. So you think about how it is now. You think about wokeness and political correctness. They will call on a campus somebody like me or you. They'll call us fascists, even though we've never had anything to do with Mussolini's ideology. We favor the Constitution and the Founding Fathers. They would make us out to be fascists. That's communist speak for anybody that doesn't agree with them. That's, you know, so
it's kind of a
this form of intimidation of people. Look at let me ask you, those three races that did not receive the 20 million, were they people that were particularly might be anti-socialist, particularly strong in that regard?
Yes, they were America First candidates, and they wanted to have closed borders, election reform, everything the establishment doesn't want. And the establishment Republican leaders in Arizona are just like Mitch McConnell. They sabotage these campaigns. I mean, Gates, the chairman, and the head of the county elections, they both contribute to a PAC designed to repress America First candidates in Arizona.
Yeah, see, the border is very important to the communists, having the border open. See, every country in the world is allowed to have a border but the U.S. because they want to shove violent drug cartels and gang members and criminals in our border, and they would like to flood us with poor people that will overload our welfare systems and bankrupt us and set us against each other, because if they're non-white, then they can claim that we're being racist if we don't want them. And so then they'll immediately sign up for being Democrats, because obviously they're not wanted, and they'll vote communist because the Democratic Party now today is effectively the Communist Party in the United States. I know this is very hard for people to hear, but it is true. The communists set their sights 50 years ago to infiltrating the Democratic Party and taking it over through its left wing. And I've been told this by more than one communist in the past. And if you look at who Barack Obama was, trained by the communist Frank Marshall Davis, if you look at who Biden was, brought up into politics through the Council for a Livable World, and brought into politics by them, which is a communist front organization, supported by Armin Hammer into the U.S. Senate. Armin Hammer, a proven KGB agent, read Edward J. Epstein's Hammer file on Hammer. You start to put the dots together when you look at who Clinton and Hillary Clinton are, and the radical communist groups that they were associated with in the 60s and 70s, then you realize the Communist Party has only has 8,000-10,000 members now, because they've all gone over to the Democratic Party. They only need a skeleton crew to man the old communist fort, because the new Communist Party, and of course everybody in the Communist Party is not a communist, but they are, unwittingly, they've been hijacked. And the Republican Party, they've used this trade with China thing and the money that's generated for corporations. They've used that to capture the elite of the Republican Party. And it seems like, because with Americans now, it used to be principle and freedom and being independent mattered more. But now I think with Americans, the money matters more. And that is what's killing us. If Americans don't care about their independence and their freedom, they will be destroyed by China. Because China has already compromised us to the point we're most of the way to them destroying us. They just need to paint by numbers a little bit more, and they will have us disarmed. And then they can just come in and take everything they want. And that's what their plan is. They've had a lot of bumps on the road, and they're, you know, it's kind of bungling. But when you've got no resistance and so much corruption here, I mean, people here talk about corruption in Ukraine. Are you kidding? Look at the United States. What were these last two elections? Ukraine had a election that was stolen in 2004, and the people in Ukraine stood up and said no, and they had a do-over. in America, where's our do-over?
Well, I can tell you this. I've been approached to be part of a group, and they're very prominent people, and I'm not at liberty to say publicly yet who's all involved, but it'll soon become apparent. And people are coalescing their efforts on Maricopa County to do a do-over. But aside from that, I agree with what you're saying. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a very serious issue, and I think the thing is people cannot see any of this as just simply one thing. We talked about these four issues you have me talk about. We cannot see them isolated. We have to see them connected as a whole. So I will connect this. You're not supposed to talk about election fraud in the United States, and of course we need to have proof, and we need to be responsible citizens in how we go about, you know, policing our elections. But the thing is, if we're not allowed to question, if saying, wait a minute, I have questions about this election, I think there needs to be real investigation. I think we can't just be fobbed off with some bogus explanation.
I agree.
We need to see the real thing, and we haven't. I think we've stumbled a lot, and we haven't gotten to it, and so. But we need to get to it. We need
Some
to do it.
Some of us
it, but...
have gotten to it, Jeff. Let me just give you one point, just one point. The day of voting recipients for Carrie Lake voting, she got 3 out of 4 votes day of. So they had to sabotage the Maricopa County total so she'd end up 17,000 votes behind so her opponent could win. Now, there are also a total, and I'll get to the point here, but a total of 296,000 ballots that did not follow chain of custody. And I've seen the proof. I'm satisfied. But let me tell you what I do know. I do know that over 50% of the machines went down in Maricopa County in heavy Republican areas. Hours-long delay, people sent to second centers, not allowed to vote because you already registered at the first center. So complete disenfranchisement. Even county employees who work the elections have spoken out against this, and they've given affidavits for the lawsuit. But let me just give you this. These machines are not centrally located. They're not connected. There is no connecting mechanism. They supposedly tested all of them 13 hours before the election, and then over 50% go down on the same day. That defies all sense of probability.
Yeah, it's pretty suspicious. you know, the thing is that, of course, in terms of legalities, proof is a difficult thing, and you need to have a due process. And they, what I'm saying is they haven't, the system hasn't even given it to us yet. Mm-hmm. The system hasn't even allowed us. In fact, if you talk about this subject, you are a non-person. They basically don't. It's basically not allowed. Just like you're not allowed. You're an election denier, right? You deny that there's valid elections. You're a Holocaust denier, or you're a climate change denier. Climate change is that other one. You're not allowed to question the so-called science of climate change. It's like, well, I saw Al Gore's movie 15 years ago, 16 years ago, whenever that was, that movie, An Inconvenient Truth. And he said by now, by 2022, sea level would be up and it would be taken out, you know, places. I mean, that according to him, the place where I lived before Eureka would be partly underwater, you know, from the Pacific Ocean. So it's like... these people have not got it right. This is not science. This is some kind of political scam. But we're not allowed to ask or question. See, there's whenever somebody tells you you're not allowed to question or debate, you know it's something dirty.
Well, climate change, vaccines,
and so it's election fraud. It's climate change,
and vaccines,
and the vaccines. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You're going to vaccinate a billion people in the Western world with an experimental new technology that would normally take 8 years to safety test, but you're not safety testing it. You're just giving it to a billion people. Isn't that a bit risky? And then you're not allowing anybody to sue if something goes wrong. And then you are, you know, not allowing anybody to see the numbers. And when things are going wrong and you're lying about it. And so, you know, this is so horrific Because, first of all, no responsible leader should ever have gone with a vaccine that is not properly safety tested to give that many people. It's too great of a risk. What happens if a third of the people vaccinated end up with a cancer or getting sick? I mean, it's possible. This is not nonsense. This is an untested. We don't know what this thing's going to do to people in the long run, and you're exposing them to this risk when you don't know what the risk is. What happens if a significant percentage of the population, and this population that you're vaccinating is so huge, and then you are using coercion, which is against the Nuremberg Code. We put Nazi doctors to get to death. You're giving people a medical treatment without their consent. You're arm twisting them, saying you're going to lose your job as an airline pilot. You're going to lose your job in the U.S. military unless they made the whole U.S. military take these vaccines, except for those that really stood fast and got religious exemptions, the very few that they kept that are still in the military with religious exemptions. A lot of them they just booted. This has been so self-destructive and frankly insane. Even if there's nothing wrong with the vaccines, it was insane because you, as our leaders, didn't know there was nothing wrong with the vaccine. Nobody could know because it wasn't tested properly. That's irresponsible. If I tell you, oh, I want you to go fly this plane over there, but we're not going to have anybody check the plane to make sure everything's working. So it might crash on the way. But don't worry. I guarantee it's fine. It's perfectly safe. Don't worry about a thing. And you can't sue us if anything goes wrong. So get in that plane and fly, or you're going to lose your home. Your wife maybe is going to leave you because you'll be out of work forevermore. You know, I mean, it's crazy. This is so evil. If people can't see it, I don't understand. You know, I just don't understand.
It is amazing. So, I hear you talk. You're summing up these points in an excellent manner. But you notice it's interesting. What you can't talk about is what you know has to be wrong. Because if you could talk about it, then it would be on the up and up. I come from an academic background of research and stat, among other things. And confrontation, statistically and ideologically and methodology, it's all part of the process. And now that process is being denied. You can't be a counter-scientific voice saying, we need more proof, I need to see more data, because if you do that, then you end up like the frontline doctors.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, have they taken Dr. McCullough's license, or they're just...
I've heard they have taken it. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. I just talked to Tom Rentz this morning. I should have asked him. I'm interviewing him tomorrow. But he will know. Tom has been at the forefront. He was one of the lawyers for the frontline doctors themselves. They tried to destroy these people, and they did a pretty good job of it, because you're not allowed to scientifically question anything.
Yeah, well, Dr. McCullough is one of the finest heart specialists in the United States. And, of course, one of the problems with these vaccines has to do with the heart. And one of the possible problems with COVID it was the fact that it produces blood clotting. And so, Dr. McCullough got on it right away and was very eager to find treatments for people, really good treatments. And you had things like, look, I got COVID about 13 months ago. I took hydrochloroquine with zinc, mm-hmm, for 5 days. But before that, I took ivermectin. I took a dose of what was recommended to me, a dose of ivermectin, and I only suffered one day. I had severe dizziness and tiredness for one day, and woke up, didn't quite feel myself the next day, and then just progressively got stronger, but didn't suffer a fever, didn't suffer any of the other effects. And that was what I took, antivirals, and it worked. And if that could work, I'm 64 years old. That was last year. I was 63. If that can work for me, it can work for a lot of people. Giving people a vaccine that's untested. I mean, how many people now, vaccine deaths, and let's not deny it. There's a family friend of ours. He got his second vaccine. And within a few days, his body was filled with blood clots. He had massive blood clotting all throughout his lungs. He went into the ICU. His heart started to not work. They kept restarting his heart, and finally they couldn't anymore. And he died. So you're going to tell me that wasn't the vaccine? He never had blood clotting, massive blood clotting? Come on, give me a break. You know, and then you've got these stories, and you've got some of these doctors who are really, really understand these issues. And I've watched this. You know, there's a very funny thing. Remember Gulf War illness?
Yes.
First Gulf War against Saddam Hussein. Back in 1990, Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. And in early 91, we counter-invaded Kuwait and knocked him out of there. Well, we made the troops that went over there, Canadian, American, and I think British, but I'm not sure. Yeah, I think it was British as well. Take this the primary among them, they were untested vaccines. One was for anthrax, and there was a couple others that were untested. We made all those soldiers take those. Now, what's interesting, you heard about Gulf War illness. Well, it turns out all of these diversionary claims of it's uranium dust from shells, from the uranium shells, it's, you know, it was from a Coke can, you know, Diet Coke left in the sun too long or whatever. They put out all these bogus theories. I read the study done by these doctors that showed they aren't sure which of the vaccines. Very probably it was the anthrax vaccine. And of course, the generals were doing CYA. They thought Saddam had anthrax. He'd used it on our troops. If they didn't vaccinate him, they would be culpable. Of course, that anthrax vaccine would have been ineffective against pulmonary anthrax. That's just a fact. So it was just for show. They were just showboating with it. There are 250,000 Gulf War veterans who got that injection and got Gulf War illness who are now dead. And that's premature death for people who were in the military service at that time. People who would be younger than me, most of them right now, are dead. That out of a percentage out of 400,000 servicemen, that's a large number. And the number of Gulf War, you know, you had about half of the total of those vaccinated got really sick. And it would take up to 2-3 years. For the symptoms to manifest, and we know it was the vaccines, because Gulf War syndrome is treated. It's an autoimmune disease. You're treated for an autoimmune condition.
Yeah,
this is what these vaccines trigger.
I was told it was in the squalene for the adjuvants, and it was hard to detect, and that's probably why they did it the way they did it. It was intentional. That's what a lot of doctors I've talked to connected to the Gulf War syndrome issue.
Yeah, in the study that they did, I think that was pretty definitive. They said it actually they didn't think it was the squalene.
Oh, really?
It's been a year now since I wrote about it and read, okay. So I don't remember what it was. But it's fairly complicated. But their methodology was excellent, the way they isolated it and figured it out. So it's pretty definitive.
I know.
So,
well, Jeff, we've got about a minute left, and I want to give you a due diligence to tell people how to follow you. But is there a quick answer? What can people do in the face of all this corruption?
Be honest and stand up for yourself.
There you go.
And stand up for your community.
Yourself. Thank you. Yeah. That's what's missing today. Jeff, tell people how to follow your good work, and your work is excellent.
Yeah, jrnyquist.blog. And I got books on Amazon, The Fool and His Enemy, and The Lies We Believe In, and yeah, definitely be a reader and learn.
Someone asked me this yesterday on a show, the odds of us turning this around, what would you say to that?
Depends on what you mean.
Returning to the rule of law, constitutional liberty, so forth, expelling the communists.
I think that eventually we will get that, but the problem is, will we have liberty when we come out the other side?
That's a good point. That's a good point.
We may not have our old life back.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
I hear exactly what you're saying. Well, Jeff, thanks for coming on and handling this multitude of topics in such a condensed fashion. Very hard to do. Did an excellent job. And we look forward to having you back on again, and I'll see you next Tuesday over on John Moore Show.
Okay, Dave. Thanks for having
Thank you.
Me.